This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, it's a throwback Thursday. Don't miss this one. We got a collapse in Augusta. Greg Norman on this date, 1996. Had a 6-shot lead, lost to Nick Faldo by 5. That's an 11-shot swing. Norman shot 78 on the final round on this date, while Nick Faldo shot at 5 under 67 to claim his third green jacket, a green jacket that eluded the shark yet again. So we got Throwback Thursday. We've also got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. We're also going to talk about Nick Saban, who had some interesting comments to say to the Associated Press about name, image, and likeness. And he is absolutely not alone in his feelings about where college football is heading. You know, at the very beginning of all this, and we're going to get to more on what Nick said and some of the other coaches, what they've had to say about NIL, is that you had a feeling when this was going to be allowed, when the Supreme Court said, yeah, athletes can make money on name, image, and likeness. We warned that, you know, us and a number of other media people said, you know what, it's going to be the Wild Wild West. Be very careful. This is allowing a more open-ended recruiting that is not going to be a very controllable thing for the powers that be in college sports. And while it is very good for the athletes, it is still going to be something that guys who love to be in control are not going to be able to control. If you are a powerful head coach in college football, not just a Nick Saban, but even like a Lincoln Riley, for example, at USC, or even a Lane Kiffin, Dabo Sweeney at Clemson, if you're a powerful coach, there's nothing you can do as the money is going to come out of different areas of the country to persuade talent that they should be landing at that particular location. But the other thing that we warned about with NIL, and we saw a little bit of this in college basketball with so like one and done's getting big deals, is what happens when the guy or the entity, the business entity that is giving these athletes the money, what happens when they demand accountability when their money isn't well spent? Meaning they convince this player to come play basketball at Kentucky or wherever, and then all of a sudden that team does not do well, like losing to St. Peter's in the first round. Now, even though college football, the athletes tend to be there for, you know, 3 years before they can go on to the NFL, nevertheless, if you are paying a kid like Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma because he's going to be the starting quarterback and he loses his job, how much is there going to be accountability to the coaching staff of the boosters that have dumped a lot of money into kids without any real result on the other end? That's a big issue. We'll talk about that coming up this hour.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser!
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb on a throwback Thursday. All right, let's get it going. What's the good of the day?
Good of the day. Vlad Guerrero Jr. had himself a night.
He really did.
And what made this all impressive, if you didn't catch it, the young Toronto Blue Jays superstar in the making had 3 home runs at Yankee Stadium last night.
Two off Garrett Cole,
but what made this more impressive to me was that in the second inning, he had his hand stepped on while playing first base, and that hand required bandages.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was bleeding.
Yeah, he got his hand cut up.
Yeah. And then comes out the very next inning and hits another home run that, you know, hits his third in the eighth inning. I mean, we do this all the time, Tony, but for me, it's like, I'm out of the game.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. I mean, I'm not only out of the game. I'm out 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
while my little cut heals on my hand.
Yeah. What's he doing? He's just hitting monster bombs.
And I think he had a double in the game too. I think he was like, he had 3 home runs and a double. Yeah, he was great in a win over the Yankees. Magnificent. That team is really good.
Yeah.
That Blue Jay team is really solid.
And that home run he had in the third inning. I mean, that's one of those that you just. You know, as a pitcher, if you're a pitcher, you don't look because you know.
No, you know. You throw it and you go, oh, gosh, that sound. Oh, here we go.
And see just, ya. You know, could you look at him just standing at the plate, you know, bandage on his finger. And you're just like, yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah. He's fantastic. But you're right. It's not just the 3 home runs. It was the 3 home runs after. And the second one came after he got.
Yeah, the second one came after the very next inning. He hit one in the first.
He got the hit the one in the first, got the injury.
Got stepped on in the second, and then hit another one in the third.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. Great. Great. And gave it up to Garrett Cole, gave up two of them.
Yes.
Poor Garrett Cole.
Well, you know, ever since Spider Tech was made illegal, he's not been the same pitcher.
That's right. Yeah, Blue Jays took the rubber game of that series yesterday from New York.
Yeah,
that's
but
they're a very good
team. They're a fun team to watch.
They are. They're young. I mean, Bo Bichette's fantastic. And George Springer was driving in runs the other night for them. They've got a team, man. They got a very good baseball team. I mean, it's very fun. That AL East is going to be really interesting this season, because the Yankees are pretty good too. I mean, the Yankees. I mean, I know that. It's catchy now with the Rays winning 100 games last year and whatnot, but
I don't think the Rays will do that again this year.
I don't think the Rays will do that again this year.
But don't you? Don't we just have this feeling now that with the Yankees, they'll just disappoint?
They probably will.
Yeah, later in the season, you'll all of a sudden be like, they're fighting for that wild card spot.
They got rid of a couple of liabilities that they've had over the year. Gary Sanchez hasn't been the best for them, and they finally got rid of him. He's not, there was a lot of issues with that. But nevertheless, I mean, it's still Aaron Judge. You still got DJ LeMahieu, who's fantastic, and Anthony Rizzo hit a home run the other night, I think, or last night, maybe. And, if Cole gets a little better and whatnot, they still can win games. But Toronto, I think, is the early vote, I think Toronto's the best team in that division. But, yeah, that was a good story. All right, what's the bat of the day?
Bat of the day is Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, we're going to get into this later on. Baker Mayfield is not thrilled.
Yeah, now, for me personally, he was appearing on his buddy's podcast. I think he was saying all the right things. Except for one comment, which is the one comment that we're all going to be hung up on. Because I think he's right in saying that he feels disrespected. I think he's right in, his complaint about, hey, I've had four different head coaches, a bunch of different coordinators. What do you expect type of attitude? I get that. But it's this cubicle comment, which I have right here, that's what everyone's going to be hung up on.
I would love to show up to somebody's cubicle and just boo the out of them.
Yeah.
And see, and watch them crumble.
I can't begin to tell you how much I hate that analogy. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And here's why it doesn't work. Because unless you are buying unless the person in that cubicle is directly responsible for the product you're buying, you have no, it's not the same analogy, right? Let me put it to you this way, Baker Mayfield. Let's go down that trip. Okay. Let's say the guy in the cubicle was somebody you paid to come to your house to do some work, and the work was crap. What would you do? Would you clap and just accept it? When people buy a ticket to a game, they want to see you perform your best. And I'm not going down the road of, do you have a right to boo or not? But you are consuming a product. You're paying money to consume a product. And if you don't like it, you have the right to say you don't like it. That goes for a movie. That goes for a play. That goes for any other sort of entertainment. But it also goes when somebody cleans your gutters or power washes your house or builds you a deck. Or paints your living room. If you don't like it, you wouldn't boo them, but you certainly would tell them that their professional output was not satisfactory to you. So when these athletes think, like, well, I would love to come to your house and boo, I bet you have. I bet you've complained when the deck isn't built right, when the house isn't painted right, when the driveway isn't repaved right, when the lawn isn't cut right. I bet you have booed in this kind of context. You've probably complained to a manager when your meal wasn't like you thought it was going to be. You've probably complained to the front desk clerk at a hotel when it was too noisy or you didn't get the room you wanted. You've probably complained at the airline when they overbooked the flight and they've bumped you. You've probably complained to a cab driver that took too long to get to a location. There's a million ways you boo in real life. You just don't say boo. But the athlete can't go up to you and say, Baker, I was very disappointed. I paid good money to come to this game and you threw three interceptions. Now, I paid good money to come see you play and you didn't have a very good game. It didn't look like you were very prepared. How can that customer who's consuming your product react to your bad service,
your bad result.
Boo.
A strongly worded email or letter. I'd say letter.
Exactly.
And hand it to him as he's walking through the tunnel.
I mean, we all do this in different capacities. This whole idea that they're not allowed to boo you at your work, they do it every day in certain industries. Like, it really bothers me. It really bothers me because it shows that they don't actually get what they do.
Right.
Right? And this goes beyond the old, they pay our salaries. I'm not even going there. This is you. When you're in the entertainment business, the only source of income you have is the consumption of the product of people who pay to see it. That's it. Look, if I have somebody come build my deck, right? What am I paying for? When somebody comes to build a deck for my house, let's say I want to build a nice deck, right? What am I paying for? Well, I'm paying for the lumber. I'm paying for the concrete to be poured in for the posts. I'm paying for the stain. I'm paying for the nails, but I'm also paying for the labor. But I'm not paying 100% of the labor. I'm paying for some of the equipment, which a guy could just leave and have me build it for all he cares, right? But some of that goes to him. Some of that goes to the. When you buy a ticket to a movie, or you buy a ticket to a game, or you buy a ticket to a play, it's 100% to see the people perform. You have to pay extra for popcorn and drink. Right, or concessions and merchandise. It's only to see that person perform. And when they don't live up to your standards, what are they supposed to do when they paid $100 to come see you play? $400 for a family of four, plus parking and all that other stuff. Are they supposed to just take it? Are they supposed to just accept it? No, they can't get their money back, but they can boo. If I go to a movie and sucks, I can complain online. I can tell my friends that movie's terrible. I can say it was one of the worst experiences that I've ever had. Like stop acting like fans are being disrespectful to you. You provide a service. You play in the NFL. This is the life you chose. It doesn't come as a shock that you're playing in front of stadiums full of people. Like when you signed your contract, you're like, wait a minute, hold on, we're playing in front of people? I didn't know that. Oh, I'm sorry. These stadiums are actually going to be filled?
Can we just go back to the COVID bubble?
Yeah. Like, what are we talking about here? So, yeah, Baker, easy.
Yeah. But again, I mean, the problem is that I think he was saying the right things. I mean, he has a gripe with his organization right now.
He does.
I mean, and I can see where he is being disrespected. Even on a better level than when Deshaun Watson was saying he felt disrespected with the Texans when they hired a coach without his say. Like Baker, I'm like, you literally brought in a new quarterback.
I can't speak for other industries, but I'm sure that, but I don't know how, like if you're a sales director, does your company say to you, like if you're director of sales, let's say you sell aluminum siding and you're the director of sales, does the company tell you you're safe while they are negotiating a deal to bring in another sales director from another aluminum siding company to come take your job? Because that's what happened to Baker Mayfield. Like Baker Mayfield was told he was going to be the guy. Meanwhile, while they're telling him he's going to be the guy, they're negotiating a deal to get Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Like that's why he feels disrespected. But the team would say, we would never tell one quarterback that they were getting another quarterback until that other quarterback, that deal was done. But you were better off not telling Baker Mayfield that was going to be his play. You're better off not saying anything.
Saying it, yeah.
Right? You're better off just not responding.
But I mean,
to him
it feels like this
get a deal done.
But it feels like this is Baker's MO where yes, you're on the right, but you always bring it to this and this is what we're going to focus on.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, this is why the Atlanta Falcons and Matt Ryan aren't together anymore, right? Because Matt Ryan was like, it's clear you don't want me. And they're like, you know what? You're right. We don't.
Yeah, we got
to
move on.
You're too expensive. Like, we were hoping to get Deshaun Watson. We can't. And now we're going another direction. So we'll trade you. Right? And, like, that's – Baker's looking at that situation going, well, look, the quarterback responded to them going after Deshaun Watson by saying, well, then get me the hell out of here. And they did. And now I don't have a home yet. Like, they're – like what's going on? Like I'm still hoping Seattle picks me up.
Yeah. Like or someplace.
Like I'm out here. Like I know I don't have a starting job here, but now I don't have a starting job anywhere. Matt Ryan goes, hey, by the way, that's not cool. Send me out. And they go, hey, go to the Colts.
Or all of a sudden he's looking at it going like, yeah, now I know I'm the placeholder.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Until Deshaun Watson is, you know, okay or whatever, whatever
the case
might be.
You'll need me when he's suspended for half a year.
Yeah.
Right? All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day, this dumb of the day changed. Because at first, when I first read it, I first saw the title, it was Sports Illustrated Resorts.
Okay.
So there's going to be, like the Hard Rock Cafe has resorts all across the country. Sports Illustrated is getting into that game. And at first I was like, why? That just made no sense to me.
Yeah, that doesn't make
why
sense.
Why is the magazine? Then I saw artist renderings of this. This could be the greatest bachelor party destination that your fiance would agree with in the history of mankind.
Is there casinos?
No, there's no casino. Well, I don't know yet. That maybe that's added afterwards. But there's one that's going to be coming to Orlando in 2024. There's one down the Dominica somewhere. They're going to put one in Hawaii, blah, blah, blah. But the resort will feature a baseball diamond. So you can go and play with your boys. Go-kart track, water park, spa, and wellness, plus family-friendly water sport. Tony, the artist renderings of this looks like it looks like so much
fun. That sounds very interesting. That sounds actually kind of cool.
And then so it switched. The dumb at first was like, why does Sports Illustrated want to get into this game too? Why haven't they done this sooner?
I thought Sports Illustrated was a dying entity.
Apparently not.
Like, I just thought, like, the magazine's starting to go away a little bit. Online, I guess they're all right, but I thought it was just kind of one of those things was like, there's an oversaturation in the market.
Well, this could either make them or break them, right?
Yeah.
If they sink their money into the resort and it fails, then they're going to be like, well, we got to shut it all down.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this looks fun.
I might be a consumer of that, but not as a bachelor party, but something.
But I'm saying, I'm saying if you get a group of young guys, instead of sending them off to Vegas where, people could get in trouble, you send them here where, you're just having fun. You know, attach a golf course to this and you got a baseball diamond to play, play catch with your boys. You got a go-kart track. Oh, just so many fun opportunities.
That sounds like a pretty cool
thing. So many
thing.
Activities.
Yeah. I mean, if I were to list the major influences in my life as to why I wanted to do this, Sports Illustrated's at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Like, that was my favorite thing every Thursday when it came in the mail, was getting Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, I remember every year.
Cover. I read the thing from cover. I mean, I read that magazine cover to cover.
Every year we do, your school will do magazine subscriptions.
Yeah.
That would be the one I would say, sign me up for this one.
Yeah. I always got, my father used to have to come. He used to go on this day trip to New York City, and he'd always have to wake me up all the time. To ask where Sports Illustrated was, he would leave really early in the morning, like super early. Like neither one of us thought it was like maybe the night before I should probably put it out for him. Like, hey, Dad, I'm done with this. Here you go. Like, no, instead, like just before he would leave for the airport, you're like, hey, Anthony, where's Sports Illustrated? And I'm like, I don't.
Yeah, just
don't
once
know.
You should, all he wanted you to say was, left it by your keys, Dad. Yeah.
Don't they have a magazine stand at the airport where you could just get another copy? Like $1.25. Taking my allowance. Don't wake me up. No, but seriously, it was my favorite thing. My favorite thing was my brother and I used to take the covers. We saw my dad's friend did this in his one of his rooms, like his office in his house. He like used them as like the covers as wallpaper. And it was beautiful. It was just beautiful, like wall to wall, whole wall covered in these things. It was like a history. Like you point to the different important covers. And my brother and I wanted to copy that so bad. And we were trying to do the same thing in our rooms. I mean, that was a major. Then it just sort of died out.
Like overnight, it felt like it.
It just sort of died. They went from weekly to like biweekly. Then it was more online. The good writers all left. I mean, not that they're not good writers there, but like Frank DeFord, Rick Riley, right? All the major writers in the game were working for Sports Illustrated. Peter King worked for Sports Illustrated. All right, so I would venture to one of their resorts. So,
got to check it out.
All right, a little long on Good, Bad, the Dumb. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about one of those issues in Baker Mayfield when we get back on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, Throwback Thursday, 1996, Greg Norman collapsing at Augusta, losing the Masters to Nick Faldo. All right, real quick, Baker Mayfield, we talked about him earlier in the bad. I say this with the caveat that I understand now a kind of a new media that we're doing. And that is, and I think you brought that up, that he was on a podcast when he was talking, a friend's podcast. And we're starting to see this now where a way an athlete would talk about their circumstances is if they won, let's say Fox was coming in for game of the week and they wanted to do a sit down with the quarterback, or, you know, ESPN was doing an interview with a guy during the offseason or whatever. But those are usually controlled. I'm going to ask you a few questions. You're going to give me some kind of boxed in answers, and, you know, that's it. And with the sort of the coming of podcasting, which is a different format, which is a more relaxed way of having conversations, we are starting to see more and more athletes are opening up and talking about what's really on their mind and what they're really thinking and what they're really going through. This is the one thing that I always have to be careful of. Just because an athlete didn't say it doesn't mean he's not feeling it, right? Just because you couldn't get into the brain of certain athletes in the past, it doesn't mean that they weren't thinking those kind of things. Now, as there's a more openness to talk, well, when Baker Mayfield talks about his injuries and playing with four different coordinators and different head coaches and all of those things, he immediately gets tacked as, see, other quarterbacks who've gone through that never complain. Other quarterbacks never talk about their injuries. Yeah, but it doesn't mean they're not thinking it. It's just that he caught himself in this podcast with this little more open environment where he feels like it's a little bit more cathartic to sort of talk about these setbacks that he's had. And then they get criticized when they're too open. So we want people to say things, but we don't want them to say too much. So there's this balance that sometimes gets kind of lost in the shuffle. And I think Baker getting ripped for being like he's complaining when all he's doing is setting up the circumstance. But I think the thing that we'll always have got to take to heart is with Baker Mayfield is he has been a player that he's the number one overall pick. So when you come into this league with that level of enthusiasm for your position, right? You're the number one overall pick. You're not just a first round pick. You're the number one overall pick. But he was also up for the challenge of going to an organization that, since its re-arrival into the league, I mean, I wouldn't even say re-arrival. It's a legitimate expansion team. I mean, if they weren't called the Cleveland Browns, they would just be an expansion team. So they are an expansion team. They own the history, but that team is in Baltimore. So since its arrival in 1999, it has never had a franchise quarterback. It has never had a quarterback that has been the rock-solid star of the city, only for brief periods of time, and then they disappear. So he was the guy that was like, I'm ending all of this, right? And then when you get a little bit of success, got the team to the playoffs, we beat the Steelers in the postseason, right? Gave the Chiefs a little bit of a run. And then the next year, you're dealing with a shoulder injury. You're dealing with an offensive line that's a little bit more porous, right? You're not being allowed to throw the ball a little bit more. You're more run-oriented, all of those kind of things. And then all of a sudden, you feel like, well, there's enough, I've done enough, or I've worked enough that this season particularly, people around me would understand why I struggled. Right, people who really know, the coaching staff, the general manager, the team owner, everybody who's following this every single day would understand that I had these kind of obstacles. I've had these kind of struggles in a year that there was a lot of expectations that we didn't meet. So he had every right to feel like, well, the team is still on my side, right? Only to have them go, no, we're not. And by the way, we just told you that you were. But by the way, now you're not. Now, not only do we bring in Deshaun Watson, we're willing to bring in a guy that could be suspended, that could be a bad PR look for our team, and we're going to give him a whole bunch of money guaranteed. He's not just better than you, Baker Mayfield. He's better than you in every possible way, even in his flaws. And that has to sting when the organization is saying, we're going to take a guy who's been accused by all of these women of sexual, harassment and sexual, impropriety. We'd rather do that. We'd rather swim in that pool than deal with you. That's got to hurt. Absolutely got to hurt.
Yo. You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday, 1996. We've been talking about it this morning with Greg Norman's collapse at Augusta National. One of the more heartbreaking things you could see there were in golf. There were two. I would say there were two moments, two golf events in my lifetime that made me go, oh my God, I can't watch this anymore. I can't watch this. One, watching Greg Norman 18 holes of just utter frustration and pain as he just could not win that Masters. That just got getting away from him. And two, Jan van de Velde in the 1999 British Open, where he had a three-shot lead on the 18th hole at Carnoustie, and he proceeded to make a seven to get into a playoff with Paul Laurie and Justin Leonard. That was really... Have you ever watched that YouTube of Jan van de Velde? Just watch it again. It's unbelievable. It's like all he needed to do was make a six.
Right.
And they were engraving his name into the claret jug. And he's on the first tee and they give him he takes a driver. And it's like, aren't you going to do what, in Tin Cup, like just break it over your knee if you're the caddy. She's like, you ain't hitting this. And Mason, you're not going to hit this either. Like, hit a six iron for the love of Pete. You can hit 4 6 irons to the green and make your six and go home with the claret. But he hits a driver. It gets a little away from him. He hits a shot that bounces off the grandstands, lands in the high grass. He puts it in the water, takes it out, puts it in the bunker, takes out of the bunker, makes the putt for seven, and then loses a playoff. Greg Norman, though, was a slow, slow demise. Like, it's a bogey. And now this for par. Oh. You know, this for bogey. There it goes. And it was real. So it happened on this date in 1996. We get 1996 music.
There's another Masters kerfuffle, I guess. Uh-huh. Happened on this date in 1968.
Was this Roberto DiVincenzo signing an incorrect scorecard?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, there you go. Look at
that. That's got a sting.
That does sting. He would have won the Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it probably would have gone to a playoff, right? Because it would have kept him tied.
Well,
but he had the momentum.
For those who don't know, yeah, it would have got him in the playoff. For those who don't know, so when you play in a golf tournament, you are given a scorecard of your opponent. And you're responsible for keeping his scorecard. And they are, in return, keep your scorecard. So at the end of the golf tournament, when you see those guys go into the tent, they are checking the scorecard of what their opponent wrote down for them. So if their opponent writes a wrong score, you're responsible for that. Now, it's sort of a... people have always, like said, it's kind of outdated because... with all the technology we have, everybody knows the score anyway.
Right.
Like, why are you signing for anything? Like, why? Like, does, like, at the end, like Nate McMillan last night of the Atlanta Hawks, is he supposed to sign the box score to verify that he beat the Charlotte Hornets 132 to 103? Like, we know they did. Like, there's a whole bunch of people there that know they did. So why is a player responsible at all for the score of anything? Now, why it's kind of important, because it was part of the tradition of golf. I remember I played in when I was in college, a friend of mine and I played in a sectional, like opening of the US Pub Links, a regional, the first round of it. We signed up to play in the US Pub Links. And I remember I went down to Massachusetts and a friend of mine got an early tee time and I got a later tee time, but I had never played in an event like that. And they gave me a scorecard, and it took me like three holes to figure out what I was supposed to do with it. Like, I didn't know I was keeping my opponent. I thought I was keeping my own, but I was like, wait, hold on. I think I'm supposed to keep his score. And so I just changed it. Luckily, I caught it. But my friend, he had no idea. He had never played in anything like that. He had no idea. They don't tell you. They just give you a card. He wrote down his score. And at the end, when they turned in the cards, the guy went, that's not my score. And the guy went, oh, my friend was like, I thought this was what I was supposed to keep my score. So they had to sit down and go over round, like shot for shot to put in the correct score. And it's a mess. But here's the thing. That guy that changed the, like when he had to change, to his scorecard. Nobody had any evidence of what he shot. It's not on television. It's like the first of many layers to get to the pub links. My friend and I just were like, we had the handicap to qualify for it, so we were like, shoot, let's do that. That'd be fun. We had no business being there, but nevertheless, I guess the buddy, my buddy's partner could be like, he was good. Like, my buddy's partner was really good, but there was no evidence that he did that other than the signatures. Like, he signed his card, and then my buddy signed it. But even my buddy was like, I don't even know if he, I don't know. Like, I wasn't keeping track of his score. So that's a kind of an old golf tradition that you don't necessarily need today. So, yeah, Roberto DiVincenzo, even back then, when he signed the incorrect scorecard, everyone was like, yeah, we know what you shot. Why are you signing for that when we know it's this? So it makes it kind of stupid. But they still do it to this day. Like, when you're on the green and you're hugging your caddy and everybody's screaming and hollering and you're going, everyone's going nuts, it's not official yet. Like, it's only official when you sign the scorecard. Because if you sign for a score that's less than what you shot, you're disqualified. That stings. So, all right. Speaking of, I'm not speaking of anything, but Nick Saban does not like the NIL in college football. He's not the only one. A number of head coaches have said, it's not that they don't like it. They said, well, this is going to be different. Saban talked about it being on the equivalent of buying players, which it's exactly what it is. But here's the thing. We know that name, image, and likeness has changed college football. We know the transfer portal has changed college football. We don't know if it's for the better, but we know that it's changed. So as we talked about a few times, especially with just the NCAA tournament, if you're a head coach, you are navigating through the idea that players that are coming to your program and you want them on your program and they may not start, you better figure out a way to make them happy because they'll just leave. And you hear these coaches bemoan this all the time. College football is in a different little boat because in college football, you've got players for 3 years before they go to the NBA, to the NFL, but in college basketball, you can have one or dones that show up and are like, yeah, where's my money? Like, I'm a 5-star recruit. Like, what am I getting out of this deal? So that's a new landscape for these coaches to go through. And like, Roy Williams probably had enough of that. And that's why he's no longer the coach at North Carolina. Mike Krzyzewski probably said, I don't really want to navigate through that either. So I'm leaving too. Might as well. Now is a good time to do that. Now, I don't think Nick Saban is leaving anytime soon. I don't think Dabo is leaving anytime soon. They're just going to have to figure out a way around it. I agree with Saban, though. I've been kind of on the fence about this. I think it's great for the players, and I'm glad it's actually occurring for the players. I just don't know what it's going to look like. I just don't know in a few years, how will the recruiting battles really heat up? Like, I mean, what's next? I mean, are we going to give houses, cars, and $10 million? What is Arch Manning going to get when he enters this real recruiting race for Arch Manning?
His own island.
Right? Like, is that what we're doing? Right? I mean, what are people willing to do for their school? We know that
he's going to be given Tony Stewart's compound.
Yeah, right?
That'll make me so mad.
How great would that be? What's the nearest college to Columbus, Indiana? We could get that.
Indiana University?
House. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
Check a map. But what Saban's point is that, yeah, it's at a point of buying players. Now, here's the thing. Everything that we've known about college athletics since the moment you found out that college football was a thing when you were a little kid is now wide open. College athletes have been getting paid under the table forever. But now it's open. Now it's honest. Now it can be done legally. And now it can be done, as we've talked about before, it can be done without the sort of, I can't really say anything, even though I'm disappointed in how this went down, from the boosters that are putting in a lot of money. Look, no matter how much a booster loves his school, he's not giving a kid $500,000 to just come to the school so that they can go, 8-4 and play in the Music City Bowl. That's not what this is about. They're not handing over money because they're generous guys. They're handing over money because they want something out of the deal. And that something is usually a couple of things. One, closeness to the athlete. Two, They want that athlete at that school to actually perform what they do best. And three, through that, they want championships of some kind. And that is where these coaches are now going to start being held responsible publicly from people that are willing to pay these athletes the kind of money that it would take to get them to that school. Right? I think I've told this story before. I used to do a South Carolina Gamecock show with a guy who I really liked. He had a business in South Carolina, and he was a pretty successful guy, but he wanted to do this Gamecock football show with me, and we did it together. And I remember he used to talk about these players, and in the way he would talk about them, he would say things like, "Oh, I know Sam Smith. He's like a son to me. He's like a son." And I'm like, "How?" And I would just kind of poke a little bit. And he says, "Oh, yeah, because he was a big booster. And he got to know these guys. He got to know these. And he was so proud. He would name drop all of these athletes. And while I never said, how did you, are you paying these guys, illegally or whatever, I didn't think he was necessarily doing that. But you could see he was a perfect example of how boosters just, this is what they want. They're giving money to the school, right? They're donating money to the school. They're alumni. They're donating money in whatever capacity. And what they want is that they want that little extra, right? If you're a superstar quarterback, they want to be able to say they know you personally, right? And so now with NIL, this becomes more of a business deal. And these business deals, if they don't go well, who pays the price for it? Is it the player? Well, of course not. Is it going to be the coach? Yeah, it's going to be the coach. Now, Nick Saban doesn't have anything to worry about. But can you imagine being Billy Napier at Florida or somebody else? And you're hearing this from boosters? Like, "Hey, man, I paid John Smith to play quarterback for us. Why isn't he playing quarterback?" "Well, he's struggling right now. We feel like Tommy Jones is better." "Well, that's not what I paid this kid $750,000 to do here." Like, can you imagine what it would be like for a college football coach to field that call? Like, who wants that? Does Mike Tomlin have to deal with that from season ticket holders? Like, does Mike Tomlin owe a guy that's got 8 season tickets or a luxury box any explanation at all as to who he's playing? Absolutely not. Does Mike if the local Pittsburgh Steeler brewery hires some running back and pays him an endorsement deal, and they're like, "No, Najee Harris is getting all the carries," and that brewery goes, whoa, "No, we're paying this guy. We want him." Mike Tomlin doesn't have to field that call. So these college coaches, do they have to field that? Do they have to listen to that? Do they have to get in the middle of that fight when a guy goes, "Man, I'm not throwing my money away. Why am I throwing my money away on these recruits? You're supposed to be playing them, and they got win national championships for us." And the coach is like, "I'm run the team the best way I possible." I can only imagine that it's a massive headache. But when we come back, there's one more headache that I think NIL is not necessarily handling, and I wish more coaches would talk about that. And that's next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Alana Morissette, is she still kicking around?
She's still kicking around. She didn't die.
Well, I don't mean that. I mean, like, is she still performing? Is she still touring? Does she still produce records?
I know she was a judge on a TV show recently.
Okay.
Some show where it was like an avatar came out and sang.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just for future reference on the show, when I say kicking around, I don't mean physically dead in the ground.
Not yet?
I mean, like, doing right. What they do. So, for example, if I say, "Is Tiger Woods still kicking around?" You say,
"He didn't
die. He's playing in the RBC Heritage."
He almost died.
Right.
You don't want me to go there?
Yeah, that's pretty true. 1996, Throwback Thursday. On this date, Greg Norman blew the Masters. There you go. Just screwed it up. Messed it up in the final round. All right, so I was talking about Nick Saban's comments about NIL, his concerns about it, where college football is going. And I was saying, look, I mean, it must be tough for coaches because they're now dealing in the openness of having players get paid by boosters who then want a return on that product and return on that investment, and coaches have to hear it. But what about the other side of it? And I don't think anybody's really addressing it. And I'm not saying nobody. I mean, I'm probably there are a few. But listen. One of the concerns we always had with the NBA, high school to the NBA, right, was when you take an 18-year-old kid and he grows up in a lower middle-class family, lower-class family, middle-class family, whatever it is, whatever his economic situation is, and then you thrust at him millions of dollars from the NBA and that level of responsibility, it's very difficult sometimes for these guys to understand it, and maybe 1 year at school sort of acts like it's a little bit of a buffer or whatnot. What about a high school kid that is getting all of this money and he's not being told what to do with it? He's not being told how to manage it. He's not being told how to take advantage of it, right? I mean, there is anybody guiding them along the same pitfalls in life that is so concerning to the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL, that they have symposiums for this? Like a young quarterback who's going to a major university football program, and there are just six-figure deals, maybe even a seven-figure deal thrown at him, where are the classes or symposiums that teach him how to deal with everybody coming out of the woodwork to get a piece of him? Like, by the way, every cousin you've ever had, ever, is now going to come out of the woodwork. Like, every single person you've ever known in your entire life is going to be knocking on your parents' door, wondering if they could talk to you. Like, is anybody looking after them? That's one of the drawbacks of NIL.